Hi, I'm Janie Reisner, and welcome to Women's Voices. Thanks so much, everyone, for your wonderful and much-appreciated support for KZYX during our recent pledge drive. It was very much appreciated. We have an amazing show this evening. My guest, Claudia von Warhoff, professor of political sciences and women's studies at Innsbruck, Austria, author of The Failure of Modern Civilization and the Struggle for a Deep Alternative, is calling for a planetary movement for Mother Earth. We will also hear the voice of Dr. Rosalie Bertel, a nun and 80 years old, an internationally praised American natural scientist, biometrician, and environmental epidemiologist, author of Planet Earth, The Latest Weapon of War. She's also laureate of the Right Livelihood Award, 1986. The sound clip of Rosalie's voice has been graciously supplied by Frieda Worden of WINGS, Women's International News Gathering Service. So thank you, Frieda. Rosalie's voice comes from a video. You can Google her name and find it, and you will find much more. It's Rosalie Bertel, B-E-R-T-E-L-L. By the way, this video was made in 2005, so some of the things she's talking about, like the installations of HAARP, she names just a few, but as we go on to Claudia's talk, you will hear there are others that have come into being since then. Since there's a 9-hour time difference between Austria and here, my interview with Claudia has been recorded. Claudia von Warhoff, born in 1943 in Berlin, is one of the pioneers who has established the academic subject of research into women's issues, also a single mother. Her theoretical work is concerned with feminist theory of society, patriarchy and technology, social movements, and ecofeminism. She is an activist against the free trade. She observes that under neoliberal economic policy, social, cultural, traditional, and ecological considerations are abandoned and give way to a mentality of plundering. All global resources that we still have, forest, water, genetic pools, have turned into objects of utilization. Rapid ecological destruction through depletion is the consequence. Professor Claudia Warhoff calls for the creation of the planetary movement for Mother Earth. She writes, "We have discovered that the military in the East and West has developed new technologies which could attack the planet and transform it into a weapon itself. This technological process is by no means controlled by the public. Moreover, these technologies can be used everywhere on the planet as plasma weapons, weather wars, and geoengineering." I feel this is a very, very important show, that we're talking about such serious things. Welcome, Claudia. I am happy to have you on Women's Voices.
Thank you. I'm also happy.
Good. Who would guess that you are speaking from Austria? The first question I ask my guest is, how did your own mother influence you to become the woman that you are today? What part did she play in that?
Well, it's not so easy to answer this question, because my mother was a very good comrade, but not really a good mother, so to say.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, she left me. I mean, she gave me a lot of freedom, so to say, but she didn't really introduce me into a woman's or a mother's life or so. She was very courageous, and she was free inside, but, you know, what I had to learn as a mother and as a woman, I didn't learn from her. So she didn't prevent me from developing or so, you know. But I think the things have developed differently, because I have always been a rebel or something like that. So I always was on a very different trip than other people around me. And from my point of view of today, I would say it has to do that I felt like a matriarchal being, like a woman or a matriarchal being.
Yeah.
But I can only say this now, after so many years, because at that time I couldn't identify what was different between other people and me. So I felt differently and I did different things than other people did. And only by time I found out that this has had to do with something like, I thought as if I was a matriarchal being, you know, in a patriarchal world, a totally patriarchal world. So I always went in opposition to everything. And I didn't know why. Well, later I found out.
How interesting.
But it didn't have anything to do with my mother or my father. It was just, I was born like that, you know. Proves that, babies are born with a certain idea already. And this doesn't have to do with their surroundings.
Could you say a little more about your history and what set you on this path of not only recognizing patriarchy with its violent and destructive motivations, but seeing the importance of critiquing it, and from there becoming aware of what these guys are doing in the heavens with their weapons of destruction and war, and I should say on the earth as well?
Well, but I have been born during the Second World War still, so in south of Berlin. So I think I got the whole catastrophe and what is war and violence, I got that as a baby already. And I'm coming to that point now, in these years, I'm coming back to it in a way. And this is a big journey, you know. I made a big journey from war to war. And I think we are today entering a new war, and or have entered already without knowing, really. And this is where we are where I'm now, you know. So this was a big journey through the whole world, and it wasn't easy. But the thing is that I always try to find out what went wrong. I always felt that things are not okay in a way, you know. Things are not, that there's no justice, there's a lot of violence. And but this is not explained to anybody, so I felt that I had strong feelings about these facts of life, and I tried to find out. So a sort of a search for knowledge, of cognition, where did this come from, or does come from, was always very important in my life. First of all, I started to know my surroundings. I went through all the social strata around me, and then I started to travel and to see the world. And I was very active in many types of work and many types of social movements and of empirical research, etc., discovering the real problems in a way. And from that I learned that the main problem is that with women, that women are not recognized neither in science nor in politics. And so I concentrated then on this question.
Good for you.
Yeah, hope for others too.
Absolutely. Well, I think innately, I think the small child has a very strong sense of what is just and what isn't. And of course, we don't pay attention to that. But they,
all children have,
Absolutely. And I too, as a child, was very upset about things that weren't right, that weren't handled well.
I think this is a remnant from our matriarchal past, which is so present in me, and not so much in others, but children always feel when something goes wrong and when there's no justice. They feel that always. And I think this is because we really have a big tradition and a large tradition of a matriarchal culture behind us, and we still remember that how things ought to be. Sure. And also, for example, when people speak of democracy, they think of the egalitarian way of matriarchal societies. We have that within us in a way. And so this, but this is exploited by many people, because democracy is called some things that are not really democratic. So this is a big problem today. People, I think, remember, but they don't know what they are remembering and how this is called. This, when we call it matriarchal, a matriarchal past was egalitarian. There was no dominant structure, no hierarchies, and so on. But
I think that's the natural state of the child. We come in with that as human beings. And, of course, we lived in that natural state for thousands of years. You are heading up this extraordinary movement, the planetary movement for Mother Earth. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the weapons of destruction, the HAARP. I'm going to give the website for that movement. I hope everybody in the world discovers it. And it's www.pbme-online.org. I wonder if you'd like to read part of that very compelling statement, where you so clearly describe what HAARP, H-A-A-R-P, is, and what it might do and is doing.
Maybe I should start with the beginning.
Okay.
So we have discovered that the military in East and West has developed new technologies which could attack the planet and transform it into a weapon itself. This technological process is by no means controlled by the public, and it is not even acknowledged by existing social movements, nor the sciences, by the way. Moreover, these technologies can be used everywhere on the planet, quoting Rosalie Bertel, plasma weapons, weather, war, and geoengineering. Not only do they multiply or enhance already existing atomic and other technological dangers to an unimaginable extent, but their development and exercise also seem to be responsible for much of the observed climate changes and can endanger the existence of our Mother Earth as a whole. We rise up against these new methods of making war, even in peace times. We must act now if we and our children are to have a future worthy of the name. We demand that these technologies finally be discussed in public, examined by independent scientists, and their use or the experimentation with them be forbidden as long as they are threatening life on Earth and the Earth itself. Or if they are against the ENMOD Convention, the Environmental Modification Convention, adopted by the UN General Assembly in 1977, so this is already 34 years ago, which prohibits modifications of the environment for hostile purposes. Until now, a public discussion of these dangers has not occurred. On the contrary, any attempts of this kind have been actively impeded. If the activities are installations like HAARP, high-frequency active auroral research program in Alaska, Woodpecker in the Ukraine, similar installations near Nizhny Novgorod in Russia, in Norwegian Tromsø in Puerto Rico, and elsewhere are only harmless, why is no one allowed to know what they are really doing? Including today, there has been also a moratorium by the United Nations on geoengineering in Nagoya, Japan, last year in November, signed by 193 nations. We want these technological developments exposed and examined everywhere by climate and environmental conferences, by environmental organizations, and in general by all social movements, by the scientific community, and by politicians. Even the World People's Conference on Climate Change and the Rights of Mother Earth in Cochabamba, Bolivia, in April 2010, with 40,000 participants from all over the world, did not have any discussion of the new military technologies on their agenda. It seems that up to now, no one can or wants to make an estimate of the contribution of these military experiments to global warming, the climate crisis, apparently natural catastrophes, and other already existing ecological damages. I examined the research of the internationally high-praised American natural scientist Dr. Rosalie Bertel, laureate of Right Livelihood Award in 1986, and her practically unknown second book, Planet Earth, The Latest Weapon of War, in 2000. Upon reading her book, I started to understand the whole dimension of the technological innovation that tell us extensively and accurately trace the history of the development of new military technologies since World War II. They reach from atomic to non-atomic ways of mass destruction on the basis of the inventions of Nikola Tesla, who died in 1943.
Such a horrible-sounding stuff, isn't it?
It is. And until I understood what was going on, it was like going through hell, I can tell you. It was recognizing this sort of technology and the dangers involved in them, and that we didn't know. I mean, this is old. Rosalie Bertel always says the military is 50 years in advance.
Huh.
Nobody knows about these things, and they're, of course, happening because they are experimenting. These installations like Harp and Woodpecker, etc., they are not just there for fun. They are working, and they are making experimentation, and they are maybe attacking. And this is all, you cannot do this in a laboratory, so you have to do this
right.
in the real world.
Right.
Rosalie is really a hero that she gathered all these materials. She says that if the military is doing something to the air and to the earth and to the soil and to the water, etc., we have to know because this is the basis of our life. So we have to know that, and we have to be discussing it. There has to be an influence about it.
Of course. I'm going to stop here for just a moment and tell you that you're listening to KZYX, Women's Voices. This is Janie Reisner with a recorded interview with Professor Claudia von Verhoef, Professor of Political Sciences. And soon coming up, we'll hear the voice of Dr. Rosalie Bertel. Okay, so we'll carry on. And of course, they're doing it secretly, so we don't do that. When you first discussed this on air, then there was quite a hubbub about your saying this. That's how you discovered Rosalie Bertel's work, is that correct?
Yes, I discovered it because I heard about this earthquake in Haiti a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a discussion, and this was the first time I heard that it could have been an artificially produced one. And this was discussed in Russia, in the Duma, and from the military, and also from Chavez in Venezuela. And I thought, if this is possible, one has to make it public. And then I had the opportunity with an interview here in Austria, and I said that, and they printed it. And then there was a huge storm, you know, breaking down over me, and they declared me crazy, and this was a damage for my institute, and they wanted me to resign. After the first shock, I said, no, I have to find out what's really about it. And so I discovered Rosalie Bertel's book. I discovered that the EU Parliament here in Europe, they had a discussion about it in 1999.
Huh.
But without any result, because the commission said that this was beyond their political influence. They couldn't do anything about it. The whole question of Tesla as an inventor, etc., is not discussed in the normal sciences. Very strange, because he is really the inventor of everything we have now with electromagnetic, not only weapons, but also daily apparatus stems from him.
Mm-hmm.
And we are still thinking in the normal sciences that he was not very realistic or so. This is why the scientists cannot see what the effects are using electromagnetic waves and pulsed waves, mm-hmm. like ELF waves. These are extremely low-frequency waves, have been a secret treaty between the U.S. and the Soviet Union in 1974 already to do this. So these are things that are discussed on a level where normal sciences are not present.
Mm. I'm thinking this might be a good time to listen to have a sound clip of Rosalie Bertel speaking. So maybe we'll just slip that in right here, and then I will be back with you, Claudia.
Now we have another wonderful cover on the outside of the Earth, and these are called the Van Allen belts and the magnetosphere. And another five large rivers in the southern hemisphere. And this is what keeps the water circulating around our planet. You know about the rainforest, I'm sure. But the fact that the rainforests affect us has to do with the circulation of these rivers. They're called vapor rivers, and they're very important, and they're very clearly visible from satellite. They're about 3 kilometers above the Earth's surface. They're responsible for drought and for rain, right? Because wherever those rivers are, you're going to get a lot of water. Right? If the rivers move away, you get a drought. And I'm really emphasizing it particularly because this is one of the things our military is trying to do, is change the direction of these rivers. Now, if you go up a little bit higher, about 10 kilometers above the Earth's surface, you find the big winds. These were discovered during World War II because the jet planes were flying up higher than the commercial planes, and they found themselves caught in the jet streams. Okay, so that's another thing that they try to manipulate, is the jet stream. To the ionosphere. Now, an ion is an ordinary atom. If you knock an electron out of the orbit, you get the electron is negatively charged, and you call it a negative ion. And the rest of the molecule is positively charged, so you call it positive ions. So the energy on this level of the ionosphere, everything is an ion. Everything is positively and negatively charged. It's what we call plasma. Now, I'm sure you learned in school that substances can be solids, liquids, or gases. Well, if you get even more active than a gas, you're in a plasma. Okay, it's more motion in the molecules, and they're all electrically charged. So this is the very dangerous layer around the Earth. First of all, it's a very protective layer because being electrically charged, anything that comes at our Earth that's charged is going to be grabbed on this layer. Right? And it's going to be channeled into what we call the electrojet. Now these, remember we had rivers, and then we had wind, and then this is where the electricity is. The electrojets first of all, they contain more electricity than all of the grids in the whole world, in the whole Earth. They have more electricity. You can imagine the power of these things. If they touch down on the Earth, they blow out grids. That's really what I think happened to us in the blackout. Okay? They're manipulating these. And if they touch down, remember 1995? That was when the first manipulation of the electrojets occurred, and there was a blackout on the whole West Coast and up into Canada, Vancouver, all of British Columbia and Alberta blew out all at once, remember? And they kind of stuttered on the TV, and they said, well, too many people had turned on their air conditioners. You know? I mean, you get really, all you have to do is listen to the arguments on the TV, and you know very well that something funny happened. I mean, you just use your sixth sense. The satellites also are up there in the exosphere. That's where they travel. Now, this is just kind of puts it into some perspective. So 3 kilometers up, or about 2 miles, are the big rivers. About 16 miles, 10 miles or 16 kilometers, that's where your planes go, commercial flight. The jet stream is also a little bit above that, and that's where the military planes, they fly in the jet stream. You have to go out 25 kilometers or 15 miles to get the ozone layer. And military flights basically now are so high, they're up 52,000 feet. They're in the ozone layer. So, you know, when they tell you that it's your underarm deodorant, ozone problem, you just think about these jet planes that are right up there in the ozone layer wrecking it. Okay. If you go out about 80 kilometers or 50 miles, you're in the electrojet. The satellites are 500 kilometers. They're 312 miles up off the surface of the Earth. So our ionosphere goes out about 600 kilometers is the top of the ionosphere. Then going way out to 51,000 kilometers is the magnetic sphere. And you have the Van Allen belts up there, which are belts that protect our Earth, and they collect electrical particles that will then, in a few seconds, they go from the North Pole to the South Pole. This is quite an amazing structure. And we sit inside of it. We're cocooned inside of this structure. And that's only a little part of the universe. So I'm just taking a little piece of it and saying, this is where we live. This is our Earth. This is a document which you can send for from the Pentagon. This tells you what the military is doing. And they see space. That dominating space means dominating the Earth. Right? So they used to have forces on the land and the sea and the sky, but now they have space forces, and they have space controls. And they're preparing for space wars. And I think just from what I showed you about these structures, can you imagine what a little war is up there? You know, remember, we're still within gravity, so it still all comes down on the Earth. Besides destroying our life support system, this is what's protecting us. I went as close to what's classified as I could in my book. I did want to point out the total disregard the military has for our Earth support system. They discovered the Van Allen belts in 1958, in January, and by September, they had blown them up with nuclear bombs. You know, I mean, they wanted to try bombs at every level above the Earth. And here was something new, Van Allen belts. They described it as the most wonderful experiment that ever took place on Earth. And they simultaneously blew up the belts from the Atlantic, South Atlantic Ocean, and the middle of the Pacific Ocean. They set the nuclear bombs on rockets, set them up, and let them explode in the middle of the Van Allen belt. So basically, from the moment they were discovered, not even 6 months later, they blew them up. They created hundreds of new Van Allen belts. So this is still not healed. Now, geophysical war, which is war using the Earth system. You know how wild a storm can be? You know what hurricanes are like, and tornadoes, and electrical storms. All these kinds of things are fantastic weapons of war. Okay, and back in 1966, they were beginning to say we could use these for military purposes. And it was in the Vietnam War that they first tried to use geophysical warfare. What they can't do is they can't manufacture a big storm out of nothing. But what they try to do is take something that's already occurring and put energy into it and make it worse. Right? So they try to make more violent storms. And they can try to manipulate these things like the atmospheric rivers and the jet stream to locate where the storm will be. There were two projects during the Vietnam War. They were called Project Skyfire and Project Storm Fury. And they actually did try to cause storms. They also tried to deplete the ozone layer over Vietnam, in particular, to cause problems. Anything they could do. That was the time that they attacked the Earth with the pesticides and defoliants. So it was really the first war where there were direct attacks on the Earth and direct attempts to manipulate the Earth. This use of the Earth as weapon in the Vietnam War was what was behind the United Nations resolution that you couldn't use you couldn't use the Earth systems as a warfare agent. So since then, it's not a well-worded document, it's not a well-worded treaty. Since then, they say, well, we're manipulating the atmosphere to increase the crop yield. We're not doing it for war. So all you have to do is have a different purpose, and you can do these things. So they want full-spectrum dominance. That means the air, the water, the land, and the space. They want to dominate all of those. And space power is vital to what they want. They're not taking care of the people of the United States of America. Look at what they want. They want to dominate for U.S. national interests and investments. Right, this is their own document. I'm not saying this about them. They're not even abashed about, you know, saying this and mailing it out. You can write to the Pentagon and they'll send you this booklet. Protection of commerce. This is the important thing. And we hear this now with Iraq. What are they trying to do? The economy, the politics, and subdue all the counterinsurgents. They don't care about the hospitals, the schools, the social needs, and preserving the heritage of the Tigris-Euphrates basin where, you know, our civilization started. You don't hear that. You know, listen, but listen carefully. This is what's going on in Alaska. It's called the HAARP Project, High Active Auroral Research Project, HAARP. It's not the kind the angels use. Okay, it's in Gakona, Alaska, which is on the border of the Yukon in the Rockies, halfway between Fairbanks and Anchorage, and the most beautiful highway and the most beautiful scenery that you've ever seen in your life. Anyway, this is an array of transmitters. They now have 48 built. They expect to put 150 up. And each one of those is a major transmission tower. And they're put 80 feet apart, and they call this an array. So they're 5 by 8 now. They take up several acres, and by the time they get 150, it's going to be quite a powerful point instrument. What they do is send up energy into the ionosphere and cause its change, which then changes everything down below. They're also trying to create lenses in the ionosphere so that when they send energy up, it will come down on the Earth in a predictable area. Okay, they want to be able to, what they say, deposit energy, which is like a big bomb, any place on the Earth. The other thing they can do is they send this energy up to the ionosphere, that some will reflect back, and it's low, extra low frequencies. And they go right through the center of the Earth and come out on the other side, and they can cause earthquakes and, you know, what have you, all kinds of havoc. Now, you know, this is built totally by U.S. Army and U.S. Navy, but it's called a research project, and they consider this their contribution to education. And they're studying the Aurora Borealis, in case you ask. Okay. Now, in addition to the HAARP facility, which also works together with, there's other facilities at the Antarctic. There are facilities in the northern part of Norway. There's more than one up in Alaska. They can jointly act with others. And what they have done is set up a band of what they call super DARNs, super D dual auroral research network, no, radar network. And they take two looks at what happens in the troposphere, at the level of light, when they make a change up in the ionosphere. So they have these already set up, and they're operating all the time, 24 hours. So when HARP does something up in Alaska, these pick up what's happening on the Earth. So they're trying to learn how to manipulate the Earth's system for purposes of war. United Nations environmental ban, but as I say, they're not effective because all you have to do is say your purpose is, some good. You want the wheat to grow better. If you look at the first half of the 20th century, we were having about 24 earthquakes a year, and that jumped after 1950 to 72 a year. Now, I'm sure some of that is due to underground nuclear testing, but some is also due to the manipulation of the Earth by these Earth experiments, which they're doing without telling us, with nobody's permission. Our society turns a blind eye to what the military is doing. We kind of, anytime you read an environmental problem and the solution and what you should do, note, everything's in the civilian economy. Nobody says, what's the military doing? Okay? Read with your head. turn on the lights and see what's really being said. We're only one society on the planet. We can't allow the military to do anything they want with the life support system with no oversight and no people don't even know what's happening.
Do you have anything to say about the nuclear reactors and also what we're doing with cell phones and low-frequency radiation and electromagnetic fields and their destruction of the human body?
It is just another way to look at nature and her forces. Normally, in the modern sciences, you have this viewpoint of the mechanical viewpoint. So you see everything as parts, and they are put together, and the rest is empty space or so. And the Tesla, for example, and all these people who work with electromagnetic phenomena see the world in a different way. They see the world like quantum theory, for example, like as they are not particles anymore, but waves. Everything are waves. And the world consists of waves and not of particles. So everything is connected. And this connecting, seeing things as connected, opens a totally different view on how to influence everything if you want. So you can use these movements. So it's not, everything is moving and you use the movements and you can strengthen them or changing them or lowering them or making them higher, etc. And this is what the Tesla principle is. It's working with these movements or waves. And this means that you, of course, can penetrate everything, not only the surface of the Earth, but also the bones and brains of people. It's just the same principle. But you cannot understand that by the normal scientists and how they look at the world. So they say that this is not possible. Huh. But looking from this other perspective, it seems only logical.
Yes.
There are a lot of scientists. I'm not a scientist, I mean, but there are a lot of scientists who have discussed it, especially also in the East, in the Soviet Union, in Russia,
really?
Etc. So,
uh-huh. Huh.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you also about your longtime work on the mindset of the alchemists and their desire to replace nature. That's what you call the outcome of patriarchy, which tries to create by destroying.
Yes, well, this is...
exactly what you're talking about, in a way.
Yes, this is the outcome of my theoretical work, finally. Well, the thing is that I try to find out why everything is so destructive. And then I realized that we need another definition of what we call patriarchy, that it is not only just dominating women or something like that, but that patriarchy must be more. It must be the key to explain why everything has become so destructive. And so I turned to the critique of technology, because technology is the way how to handle the world and how to produce or destroy. So, and looking into the history of patriarchy and its techniques, I found this, what we call alchemy. I found that in the antiquity already, so in the beginnings of patriarchal developments, we have these alchemists. And the alchemists, a minority at that time, said that they wanted to change nature. They wanted to produce the best matter of all, gold, and they wanted to produce artificial life. So they wanted to become independent from women. And changing these alchemical practices, which were very old and before patriarchal developments, they existed already, but not as a hostile project to nature, but a communicative and cooperative project, as working with nature. And this changed when patriarchy took over, and they changed that into a hostile project trying to replace natural processes and cycles, and even what happens in the womb. So this is related to a lot of different practices, also to war and to the old shamanism and to people who worked like blacksmiths who worked with metals, etc. And so the idea was that men should invent a life that was not born by women or by not coming out of nature or of animals, etc. So they had a lot of experience accumulating it in different countries. It goes from China over India to Arabian countries, and then it came as Latin alchemy, it came to Europe. And my idea was that this explained very well what patriarchs even today really want. The modern technologies of reproductive technologies and even nuclear alchemy, as it is called also by others, is an intent to destroy what is there and to use it for the production of something else, of a second nature, or something that is called to be better and higher or more noble and more God, like made by God or so. And this idea I found is today is so present. It is the main idea of all these technological developments, even with the Earth as a planet, because like geoengineering, they try to make something better out of Mother Earth. And this is not better, but it's worse, because the method is always the same. They're taking what is there, what has been born or what has been found in nature. They destroy it. They call it mortification. This means bringing death to matter. And then they mix it up with a lot of different things and make something new out of it. And this new is proclaimed as better life or better matter and a better life or a better civilization, or today as progress and development.
Yes, yes. I think of GMO foods and fiddling with the genes and the DNA.
Yes. Yes, genetic engineering is typical. It is like it's also called alchemy, something like alchemy. This is something like the same on that level of genetic engineering. And you see what's coming out. You cannot produce life. Produce life is something that comes out from itself and cannot be produced artificially.
Right. I know you've written that the long wave of capitalism is the last wave of patriarchy. We just see it surrounding us. But
capitalism is the way to make profit out of it. This is new. I mean, this is the relationship between patriarchy and modern times, modernity and capitalism, is that the trick is how to make it profitable and how to force everybody into this project, into this utopia, to have a purely patriarchal society that is not any more dependent on women and nature. So you are looking for how to replace them in order to not be dependent on them anymore. And this is what makes the modern society so patriarchal, that it took over the main idea of alchemy and generalized it made it a global project. And destroying the whole world. This is what's going on today.
It is horrible.
It is horrible, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You also speak about Gnosticism, and I'm going to read a little bit here from what you've written, that 2,000 years ago, you mentioned that it comes into being, and the world was filled with war and invasion and the Gnostic view is that the world was bad and violent, so we must relate to the other world because this one is so painful. And it even gives justification of war against nature, because the only thing that is really important is the life on the other side after we die, or the inner life, never mind what's going on the outside. I just want to say, I've always wondered how come the Buddha, who was supposed to know all things, never spoke about injustice. And certainly never mentioned the mother. And it seems like we've been living in a fantasy world created by patriarchy.
This is their complex, you know. Once you are organizing a different society coming out of war, and you have to create dominance and hierarchies and the state, etc., and all these violent systems that maintain the situation, then you need an ideology. You need to be legitimate. No rule can be there without legitimation or without legitimacy. And they try to do that by saying that they are creating life in reality, that everything which is important is created by them and not by those who have really created life, etc., like the mothers and Mother Nature. So they are denied in order to proclaim that creation in reality stems from fathers or from rulers or from gods, etc. All our gods are creators of life, not women. So this is very obvious. This is the same idea on the religious side.
Yes.
Godfather has created life. There is no mother. The Trinity, there is no mother anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
No, there's no mother mentioned in the Bible. There's no mother mentioned in Buddhism,
in
newer spiritual disciplines. Although in nature, it's obvious that the mother is key to everything.
Yes, before this was the normal thing. Everything is female in the way that the cosmos and the universe is our big mother, and we are coming out of her and going back to her, and everything is related in analogy to this principle.
Of course.
As the big mother goddess, etc., the universe, which is present in every stone and in every water lake or so, and in every flower and everywhere. So the goddess is the whole life herself. I mean, or the life is the goddess. So it's not the separation which comes with patriarchy to say that God is beyond nature, beyond planet or some, because he has produced it. So it's not he himself, but it's what he has done and what he has produced and made, and not what is born out of herself or itself, which is the normal process in nature. We have forgotten about that. And this is why we don't really feel, most of the people don't see that our planet is a living being. And so all these things we're doing to her or to it are really dangerous and are killing. It sounds like a matricide or so,
yes,
or a terrorcide. People don't feel this anymore because they have grown accustomed to the modern idea that nature is pure matter and is not alive.
Yeah.
So the modern idea is matter is not alive. A living being is not even explained or described. There's no definition of life in the sciences. Only what they themselves produce, they call it life afterward. For example, a new gene or, you know, in genetic engineering, this is very prominent, or the baby that they have at the created outside the womb, etc. This is life. They know what life is, but normally people don't refer to that anymore, and it is really somehow ripped off their brains. Feel and see that anymore.
Yeah, and so then life is not seen as sacred.
No, of course not. It's just if it's dead matter, it's not sacred. It's nothing. It's just pure stuff, matter you can use for whatever you want.
Yep.
You're not responsible. It's not alive. It's not a subject. It is just an object. It is, you know, you can do whatever you want. It's a typical alchemical way to look at life. Just a sort of mass you can use whatever you want for.
Yeah. You write that in capitalism, all is turned into money. Like you look at the forest in Congo, it's looked as money. And that to change this, we need new eyes to see that the trees are alive, too. To look at trees from the perspective of the trees. And the same for the animals. We would have completely different life view if we looked at life that way. And that's what we need to do.
You have to learn that again, you know. I would say that this is a way how to be on the side of nature again, how to change place, you know, in a way, not to look from society into nature, but to look from nature into society and to look from her as a living being. Like these people in the Congo and in Africa, they were taught to stand as long in front of a tree until they would see the tree as a being and as a god and a really divine being. And this is, for us, it is not imaginable, but it's what we have to do. We have to suffer with them. As long as we don't suffer with the beings we are destroying, we won't find any way out of it.
Yes.
So this is really the form of spirituality we need, a sort of earth spirituality, to become united with these beings outside of human life.
That
animals, plants,
absolutely,
landscapes, the whole planet. We have to learn that, really.
Yes, we do. And that's really to take on the suffering of the world and feel it. That's how one's heart does open, that rather than trying to just think positive thoughts.
Yes, so many, many women, when they hear of these atrocities and this horror, they react with fear and try to suppress the fear and to not do anything or to react aggressively. And I have gone through this fear, I must say, when Chernobyl happened, the other accident in 86. I had a little boy, and we had a big women's movement against that. And we were shocked about the possibility that the children might be affected by the nuclear radiation. And then it was an experience which I can use today to tell other women. I mean, these women in Tokyo must feel that now, that it is creeping through your bones, I can tell you. Suddenly it is with you, this fear. And then you cannot just forget about it anymore.
Yeah.
And this fear is an important experience because it leads you to knowledge. It leads you to find the reasons for this fear. And then you're sad, you become furious. And this is already a very good sign. When you become furious, you are already next to how to act and what to do about it. And then the last thing you are discovering is love. It's really a very deep love for life, for your children, for the trees, for everything you are surrounded with. And when you discover this love, you are so strong that you forget about the fear, and you know what you have to do, and you know what is right, what is wrong. And this is the best you can experience. Going through the fear and coming out on the side of love, this is on the side of nature,
yes,
not of society.
Yeah.
And only then you are able to handle the fear and to, you know, and even to come through it, and you will be very strong. They cannot somehow take you as a hostage or so anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's so beautifully put. It's very touching, and it's so true. Thank you for saying all of that. We need to hear it. Your newest book, before we end here, our time is slipping away, The Failure of Modern Civilization.
Mm-hmm.
And that's coming out right now?
It's already there, and I have sent you a copy already.
Oh, thank you.
Failure of Modern Civilization and the Struggle for a Deep Alternative.
Mm.
Critical Theory of Patriarchy as a New Paradigm. This is the whole of the title, yeah.
It sounds wonderful. Is it possible for people to get it here in this country?
Peter Lang is the publisher, and people could just, if they want to have it, they can, of course, get it through the publisher. It is on the market. It is available.
Is there a website or some way to get in touch with you?
Yes, the best thing would be the website of the Planetary Movement for Mother Earth. Information, and there's my email and everything they want.
pbme-online.org.
We had just reproduced our third information letter in these days, and it is on the website, and it is about Japan especially, because this is really one of these examples where maybe the older nuclear and the newer non-nuclear techniques are cooperating, so to say. We don't know, but there are a lot of discussions about it. And they are really entering hell, these people in Japan. It's already recognized that this accident is the biggest number 7 we have in the world for nuclear accidents since Chernobyl. It's number 7, and it will be even more, because in Japan, they have a lot of something like 100 times more fuel rods that are now exposed to the air and to burning.
Oh.
So this is much more than Chernobyl, which is going to happen there.
Yes.
And nobody knows what to do. So this is a really big, big, big catastrophe.
It is. It is indeed. Well, Claudia, I want to thank you so, so very much for being my guest. This has been a wonderful conversation, and I appreciate all your work, and I know you speak in many places and at conferences. If people wanted to find more about you, they could Google your name. Claudia, Claudia, Von, mm-hmm. Von,
mm-hmm.
Werlhof.
Exactly.
All right.
Very German.
Very German.
Mm-hmm.
I thank you so much.
Thank you, Tainy.
Good night.
Good night.